Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Erin Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, it's Erin Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
All right, we've got another great episode of Innovation Calling for you. But before we do, we got some events we want you to be at.
We are excited to announce Jody Brinkeroff. She is the VP of Innovation over the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. VP of Innovation at an internationally renowned airport. Erin, that is no small task.
No, I mean, I fly out of DFW all the time. So even though American hates me, I love them because it is what it is. But frequent flyer with American, and I'm at DFW all the time. You take for granted the access that we have at such a cool airport. DFW is at the forefront of innovation, not just airports nationally, but internationally.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk to the woman who heads up that innovation department.
And she's got an incredible career, for sure.
Yes.
For sure, for sure.
So February 5th, head over to innovationcalling.com to get those tickets too. Just hang out at innovationcalling.com. It's a cool place to be. You'll get access to all kinds of stuff.
Which is City Central North Dallas location.
At the mothership, yes. So join us, Dallas North Tollway in Trinity Mills. All right. So this episode, Woman. I mean, DFW, we've got the head of innovation as a woman, and this is a co-founder of an incredible women's organization.
Yeah. So tell me about it, Erin, because...
Let me tell you about it, Sia. It's Lindsay Kaplan, who's the co-founder of a company called Chief. And Chief started because organizations like YPO, it's a really great organization for leaders, for people of a certain caliber. But the problem is, it's a boys club. And listen, I love boys. I love being around men, but there is a difference. And Lindsay and her co-founder found this opportunity that women needed a place of their own, a place that they could come to, a place that they could go, it's not just an organization. It's actually a physical building in New York. That's where they're starting. They just landed $22 million of funding.
Million.
To take this at a national level.
Yep.
Or, I mean, maybe even international. But I'm sitting there kicking myself like, why didn't I think of this? But good thing Lindsay did, because it's pretty amazing.
But I mean, if you think about her story, when she was talking about her time at Casper, for example, and the fact that there are so few women in leadership, executive leadership role. Don't get me wrong. I think there's actually a really good amount of women in director type roles. Crossing that bridge into that executive suite, if you will. That's the thing where Chief is dedicated to developing, really working each other. It's not a hobnob shaking hands. They actually do a lot of heavy work. It's almost like a mastermind, if you will, in a larger context.
Yeah, they have these groups that they go in. We're going to let you listen to this whole episode to really understand what they do. But I mean, I'm like very hopeful this comes to Dallas soon, because I know I want to be a part of it. But just, again, not just building this, but being able to land $22 million of funding as two women founders, that's no small feat that they were able to get this. So obviously, you know, this is going to be something extremely big, and very honored to have her on this episode.
I love their desire to change up, you know, an existing industry, if you will. So that's to me, true definition of innovation.
Yeah. So without further ado, here's our next episode with Lindsay Kaplan of Chief. All right, Lindsay, welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. When I found out about your company, I brought it to Sia. We were so excited to have you on. And when you accepted, I just feel very honored to have you here. So thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really, really appreciate it. So Chief is this amazing concept that launched out in New York. Can you tell us a little bit about where the idea came from and where this aha moment was, where you said, you know what, this is needed and we should create it?
Yeah, Chief was born out of a really personal problem, which was my co-founder and I both were working in startups and both climbing the ladder, feeling like there was more and more weight on our shoulders. Our decisions were more important than ever before. And as we climbed up in our career, we actually felt like we were mentoring more than ever and didn't have any mentorship for us. And it's a particular problem when you're a woman, because I think the act of mentoring is so innate the feeling of there are women who are in my company, in my life, who cold emailed me on LinkedIn, who are asking for guidance and asking for help. We both felt this obligation, duty, generous point of view on taking those coffees and having those calls. And yet we both looked back at our calendars and realized it could have been over a year since I had cold emailed somebody and sat down and asked for career advice. Wow. So that really motivated us to create Chief, just really creating a support system and a network for women who were higher up the ladder, who really needed time for themselves to network and to be in a place where they weren't mentoring, but they could go for their own support.
So one of the things C and I do, and I know I mentioned this to you, is we have an event we do monthly called Women in Tech Leadership, where we bring women in who have climbed the corporate ladder. And I agree with you. There's just such a lack of this still, even where we are, where we've, you know, more women are in the C-suite than ever, more women are higher up, but there still is this huge lack. So I think the idea is brilliant. Yeah.
There's still a huge dearth. And then what happens is we see the women who get there immediately get pulled into, can you speak on this conference? Can you show up on this panel? Can you mentor my niece? So what we really wanted to do was create something for her, not to her, that she could actually participate in and not be the participant. And we were really inspired by an organization called YPO, Young Presidents yeah. Organization. It's been around since the 50s. I hadn't even heard of it. My co-founder told me about it. And I hadn't heard of it because it's over 90% guys.
Yeah.
Four CEOs and presidents. So no fault of YPO. When you gather, you know, CEOs and presidents who are running companies of a certain size, you are left with 90% men. And it was founded on the idea that it's really lonely at the top. And what they do really well is they put these forums together, these groups of 10 to 12 president CEOs who meet every month on a regular cadence. They get together and they have their own personal session to really talk about what they're going through, really have this confidential forum to speak through personal and professional issues, because they all become blended as you get older. And it's really created, if you talk to anybody who's a member of YPO, this almost cult-like following, because the members are so obsessed with it. And so we were really inspired by what YPO built and thought, well, we can't get into YPO. Most of our peers can't get into YPO because we're VPs, we're CMOs.
Yeah.
The few of us who are CEOs don't necessarily want to be the token woman at a table of men. And so can we build something somewhat similar, inspired by that idea, for this woman who is sitting at the boardroom table, whether she is the CEO or not?
I think that right there summarizes a huge gap in general, though we've talked about this, because we can't gather enough CEO women leaders. It's like peerage, right, that you were talking about in your core groups that you're talking about. That's something to be said of, we can't even get large groups of CEO women. We still have to pull from the VP, you know, above level. But I do think you're doing a great job. I'm just, my question to you is it has it been difficult to get that core established with Chief?
Yeah. So when we launched in January 2019, so January this year, we thought we would open the doors. We were hoping for 100 members. And we assumed, because Carolyn and I were SVP and VP, we thought they would be more VP level and we'd have to strive to climb up. And what we found was we really struck a nerve. And even wow. cold emailing women and telling them about what we were building, we ended up with a founding cohort of about 40% C-level women. We have 200 executives who joined us as founding members day one. And we were really surprised, although in retrospect, not that surprised, that so many women were taken aback and said, I need to join this. This doesn't exist. There are so many places, again, where like I am the speaker, where we would cold email somebody and she would say, great, when do you want me to speak? And we'd say, no, 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 we don't need you to perform. This is for you. Come on in. This is a place for you. So we were really delighted to see that we struck a nerve. There was a huge demand for this. And in my opinion, just an incredibly underserved audience of incredible women who need this support system and who deserve it and who have earned it, that have been really overlooked, as so many organizations have tried to use them to kind of prop up other organizations and speak and be panelists and be mentors. It felt like there was something finally for her.
Yeah. And can you tell, because I know I've seen the articles, so I don't even know how old my numbers are, but you're right now based out of New York. Can you tell our listeners where your wait list is at? Because this is extremely impressive.
Yeah. So our wait list it's a little misleading, because Okay. Our wait list includes women who are not just in New York.
Right.
So there are, I think we're about 7,000 people on our wait list. And those are people who are either, you know, we want to make room for them. So they are patiently waiting, but we also have thousands of women in different cities across the U.S. as well as internationally that want Chief and signed up in order to get in line first for when we launch in their cities.
That is so amazing. Yeah, I would definitely say you struck a nerve. Like,
no. I mean, I was telling Aaron, I'm like, when's Dallas?
I know, like, we're signing up.
So Lindsay, if you can clarify for me, are you saying that the C-level executives, do they have to come from like a Fortune 500, or could they be entrepreneurs that are a startup community, maybe have a certain amount of revenue? Is there a bar of entry to join Chief in that context?
Yeah. So what we haven't done just yet that we should have up in the next 90 days is a more published, robust criteria of the member we're looking for. To date, we've considered what we call strength and length. So the idea that you could be working for 20 years, that doesn't necessarily mean you have an impact on your business. It doesn't actually mean that you're sitting at the table. We really want to make sure that we are not ageist in any way, whether that is excluding up and coming amazing leaders that will be, you know, running Fortune 500 companies in 2 years, as well as being really thoughtful about how we bring people who are in their 60s and 70s into the organization. And so we have a really great mix across industry, across size of company. We have startup founders. We have Fortune 50 executives. And our most important guiding principle is finding powerful women, powerful people who are here for the right reasons, who want to learn, who want to meet each other and support one another, and bringing cognitive diversity to the table. Meaning, I don't want us to get to a place where we're 75% women in finance, or we are 60% marketing executives. So one of the reasons that waitlist exists is for us to be really thoughtful about building a cohort each month as we create these peer groups that allows cognitive diversity as well as socioeconomic diversity, racial diversity. So that way we have a really, really great cohort of women that are all supporting each other, that are bringing different perspectives, different backgrounds to the table.
Yeah. You mentioned something that is striking a nerve with me, because it's been brought up before in a past podcast from a previous guest. Are you having any difficulty from that diversity standpoint with minorities? And I say this gently, because I can see there's a lot of white females would be mm-hmm. the majority.
You can say it ungently, because I think white feminism is a really, really, really dangerous thing at play as women's organizations build. So you can say it ungently. My co-founder and I are white women, and we knew launching this that diversity was incredibly important to us. So we immediately set a baseline for us and a goal of saying, we want to be accountable. Our goal is to get to 30% women of color as members. Right now, as of a few weeks ago, we were at around 28%. So we're not there. I'm not patting myself on the back by any means, but it's been something rooted in what we've looked for membership day one. And it's actually why we also, in addition to building a wait list, we outbound, because we don't want to sit back and wait for women to line up and join. It's our duty to go out and to find people who we think would be amazing members of Chief. So we outbound women. again, different. We outbound for nonprofits. We outbound for women who are in engineering. We outbound women of color. So again, building this diverse membership does not mean we sit back and wait. It means we have to proactively go out, hold ourselves accountable, and truly strive to bring diversity to the table.
That's commendable. And thank you for that. As a, well, I don't, well, I'm Asian.
You are, yeah.
But I'm not.
I don't know why you're trying to deny it.
I'm not trying to deny it. But it is interesting. Even the demographics of minorities, there's even that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It, yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm going at even more.
Absolutely.
Prodding
absolutely.
You even further.
I mean, when you look at the pay gap between men and women is one thing. When you look at the pay gap between men and women, women of color, Black women, Latinx women, it gets significantly more depressing. And so even saying women of color is misleading, we are really looking to bring in women who are underrepresented across the board to make sure that they are supported. And for us, if that means dipping a little bit, and I'm using my like finger air quotes, more junior into a place of she's a director, then we're going to open the doors. And we're going to make sure that we extend an invitation because we think that, again, building this impressive, powerful network means that we can be as diverse as possible.
Mm, I got goosebumps on that one. That's awesome.
I think it's awesome. But, yeah. You know, what if I want to be the jerk here and say, but you've got maybe some impressive VP seniors, whatever, of a different ethnicity or background. Are they being, I hate to say it, Lindsay, but I don't say reverse discrimination, and I know you want to increase diversity, but I guess it's hard.
It's got to be a hard
balance. That's a hard balance. How are you comfortable addressing that? Because you're going to get the naysayers, Lindsay, that say, now you're reverse discriminating. Or are you?
I mean, I don't think we are reverse discriminating. So, you know, if you're qualified to join, we will let you in. But again, we're looking for strength, length, impact on the business. We have to publish that criteria. So, humble.
Okay.
But I think for any organization, it's about not being in a confined box of your expectations, but really being open, transparent, and honest. And if you disagree with where we stand, you don't need to join cheap.
That's yeah, true. That is true. That is true. That's a great way of recognizing that as well.
Yeah. So how about the core groups? I want to dig into those because you mentioned those and that was a lot of what you saw from YPO. And I know it's really been a bread and butter thing for you all that has really helped connect and help these women. So can you talk more about the core groups and can you dive into specifically the topics you're all covering in those? And I'd be curious because I have a reason for asking this, but is it very similar to YPO or have you put a women's specific spin to them?
Oh, that's a great question. It's different from YPO for a few main reasons. One, YPO is self-member led. So they go through training to facilitate those peer group meetings. We don't want to put the onus on our members. So we actually have a trained executive coach in the room. We call them our guides. They are there to guide everybody through the journey of core and peer groups. And their role is to be unbiased, to help really facilitate and drive conversations forward, and to jump in and coach as needed. We are obsessed here with the idea of time. You know, for these women, time is the most precious commodity. Mm-hmm. Certainly for me it is. And so to have this person in the room is not only about, okay, let's stay focused, let's keep things going, but to truly give them the ask of, we have 10 women in a room for 2 hours. How do they walk out of the room feeling like they've had 8 hours of conversation? Mm-hmm. How do we concentrate that time and that value? So having that guide in the room is incredibly important to what we're building. And we almost think of it as executive coaching on steroids, because you not only have the executive coach, but you have 10 people who are mirroring the executive coach, who are learning by being in that room how to coach, who are sharing their unbiased or biased opinions and really educating through empathy. So that is much more different than YPO. The second thing that we do that's really different is we have more of a, I would say, exercise-driven approach. So there's a few tentpole moments and there's a few sessions that we do that we really want to make sure every group goes through. And a YPO is much more member-led. It's much more of a freewheeling conversation. There's structure to that conversation, but for us, we really want every woman who goes through Chief to go through certain key events that allow every single member to feel like they've gone through something similar and they've had the same program.
That's cool.
And just to clarify, this is all in person, right? Yeah. Like these meetings?
It's all in person.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now it's all in person. If you can't make it, then you can't dial in. You have to be there. You have to show your face.
Interesting.
There's actually no woman bent to it. I think of what Chief does a little bit like everyday design. Almost everything in the world is designed for a man, whether that's your car seat, your office furniture. Everything was designed with a medium-sized man in mind. Mm. We've designed everything for at Chief with a woman in mind, but not that it's feminine. So a man could use our core, a man could join, a man could use anything that is a part of Chief. I think he would find it to be a tremendous help for him, but it's designed with her in mind first. It's just like office furniture. I can sit in it and be comfortable, but it was not designed for me. It was designed specifically with a, you know, a 5'11" guy.
Yeah. Well, and so the reason why I asked this question, and I'm just curious and I'd love your opinion because I'm still trying to figure out my true side to it. So I went to a accelerator meeting and these people were looking for companies and I was just listening to what they were talking about. And it was for women. And it was an 8-session accelerator. And one of those sessions was about self-care. And I got immediately offended by it because I'm like, this is crap. Because if there were men in here, you had 8 precious sessions for to build your business. They're not talking about self-care. Right. So I was like, this is why women, you know, I got really upset. Like if we're going to compete, right, they're not going to talk about this. But then it's like, well, it's who's right or who's wrong. And that's why I was asking about the curriculum. Is there like a leader is a leader versus, okay, as women, we probably need to think about these things versus what men have to think about. And I'm just curious, as you approach that curriculum, how you make that determination? Because as mad as I was at first, the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, maybe more men should be talking about this. Or, you know, it's not about grinding and getting everything and hustling. It could be about actually taking your care of yourself, too, for the long haul. And as women, we do tend to fill our plates a little bit more full because we don't we don't have that luxury of just being able to turn off the kids sometimes. I'm curious about your approach.
I don't know if self-care is a woman subject. I think maybe you could see that worded and it feels a little bit more feminine, but I spent before I started Chief, I spent almost 5 years at Casper, the mattress company, and everything was wellness, self-care, and we were 50-50 men and women. So I think that is a distinctly American change in the way we view productivity, not necessarily a female one. But I will say for the Chief woman, we do think that endurance is tough. We do think that getting to the top of the ladder, it's not just about getting women into power. Keeping women in power is even harder than getting them there. And so I do think that men and women at this level take on a lot. I think the expectations of women are much higher. And even when you add on that layer of, hey, in addition to doing your job and potentially being a parent, we also want to trot you out to do panels and conferences and mentor, that third job alone is exhausting. And so whether it's self-care or wellness or being mindful or meditating, whatever you call it, I do think it's an important part of being a leader. And I don't necessarily think it is distinctly feminine, but I think as, you know, as a as a mom, as a co-founder, as a pregnant woman, like I personally would sign up for that. But I don't know if I would have 3 years ago. Something we really believe in at Chief is optionality. So we have a lot of workshops. We have a lot of events. We don't expect you to go to every single one as a member. We want to create enough optionality for you to choose things that you really want to go to sharpen your knives, to get an extra boost, for reassurance, for community. But I think we did 25 events last month.
Wow.
The average member is going to 2. She's not going to all 25. And that's because, you know, to define a woman leader as one thing is a huge mistake. We are all different. We all have a lot of different things on our plate. And what's on our plate changes month to month. So, you know, I could be struggling today with self-care because, well, I'm 8 months pregnant. That's the one thing on my mind is like, I gotta go home and lie down.
Yeah, sleep.
but it wasn't. Yeah, exactly. But a year ago, it certainly wasn't. And a year ago, it was knowledge, it was fundraising. So we really want to make sure that we're offering enough. And that variety is really important because what you're going through as a person, as a leader, and what you're prioritizing, it changes rapidly week to week, day to day.
So I don't have children and I although I empathize or have sympathy for ladies like you who procreate and have a career, I guess I'm intrigued with the way you actually designed Chief. If I can take it, bring it back a little bit. You guys did not opt for the floral pink colors, if you will. It's a very purposeful aesthetics that you intentionally made it a little bit more masculine at your hub, at your, I forgot the term that you guys call your main location. The clubhouse. Can I ask why, knowing full well that we're kind of creating our own, you know, old girls network, if you will, equivalent, why did you go with that aesthetics?
Well, I don't think we went masculine. I think we tried to go gender neutral. I don't personally, I'm not a pink person. I don't think
I'm not either.
Neither are we.
No, we're the least pink girls you can get.
Yeah. So I don't know where, you know, it came from that I would have to be pink. I designed something that I loved, that I thought my peers would love. And we actually went with this beautiful, deep, dark green on the walls of our clubhouse because we were actually inspired by the idea of the green room. So I know I talked a lot about how when you get to this point in your career, you're on the panels, you're speaking at the conferences. Mm-hmm. Some of the best women I have met have been in the green room before I go on, before the panel, before the conference, when I'm backstage and I get to meet the other four people who were handpicked, who, you know, are the authority that I'm going to speak with. And so we were actually really drawn to this idea of what does a green room look like for all of these women. And we thought green was perfect because it is soothing and calm and the color of money. So it really made a lot of sense. And then I personally think there's nothing more comfortable than, you know, big, beautiful leather seat, a piano, a bar. Really wanted to create something that allowed people to feel warm and welcoming. We're not a co-working space. So, you know, all of our members have jobs. They're busy. They're here to meet with their peer groups. They're here to go to an event, to go to programming. And absolutely, they are welcome to come use the space, to have a glass of wine, to take a meeting. They can bring guests in. They can bring men in. But what we don't have are tables with plugs that kind of prompt you to sit here and work all day, because it's not really the atmosphere we wanted to create. This should really feel like a clubhouse where you can connect and converse with people. And so building out that space with furniture that kind of drew you to sit back and you sunk into, it's not that comfortable to sit with your laptop all day in a big leather chair. And so it really helped elicit the manifestation of the brand we were hoping to build.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that intentionality. Now that you've described it, because I've seen pictures and I've always been impressed with the idea. And like I agree with you, I'm not a pink person myself. So I was kind of wondering why you guys went down that path. But I do like the green room. without knowing it, that's kind of what that we makes overall 100%
sense. Yeah.
You know? So again, I didn't realize though, and you've said it repeatedly, and I want to repeat this again, is you guys are not a co-working space. So it's not like you're trying to create, you know, startups or whatever. This is an actual, oh gosh, what's that? Sherlock Holmes' brother. I'm drawing out, Aaron.
Anyway.
Watson?
Mylock. No, my. Shoot. Golly gosh. I'm a huge, and I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, they were just talking about there is this room in Sherlock Holmes where basically his brother, Mycroft, goes in and they don't, this is the opposite. They intentionally don't talk to each other. It was these guys are such think tanks that this is their place to just be alone and zone out. But I liked the vibe of what you're describing, which is, no, you're sitting on these plush couches for the purpose of actually talking to each other, to exchange ideas, not be answering emails or stressing out over the next action item or task. So why aren't you guys growing like a bajillion miles an hour?
Yeah.
Why haven't you just blown up and like sat in every single town and city everywhere, Lindsay?
Well, actually, let me back up that question, though, because I think the plan has to be to... You're both in New York. You've been able to build this in New York and talking about that plan of growth to keep this beautiful thing you have all built in that plan of growth. How do you make sure it remains intact as you slowly roll out from city to city?
Yeah. I mean, our focus right now is our current member. So, you know, year one, we've wanted to make sure that she's had an amazing experience. She can give us as much feedback and suggestions as possible. We've made changes. We've made changes to how we roll out workshops, to the types of events we're having. We've made significant changes to the core program based off of their feedback. And I think, you know, we do want to grow. So we will be expanding in 2020. We will likely be launching in the next couple months. By spring, we should have 2 or 3 new cities open, but we don't want to be distracted by growth and lose sight of what matters, which is her. This business it's a network. And so if she's not happy, it's not a customer. This is an influential, important piece of what we're building. And so her satisfaction, her happiness, the impact of what we can do is paramount to how we grow.
I love that.
I love it.
And then to the point of, first of all, if you're listening, I really want to highlight when they're talking about the events they have, these are just not like another event. We're talking Tina Fey, Amal Clooney, Julianne Moore. I mean, you like watching your Instagram, I'm going to admit, is I get a little jealous. I'm so impressed by who you're pulling in. Can you talk about?
I didn't even post Barbara Corcoran, who was maybe one of my favorite speakers because she talked so highly about the art of bullshitting. It was hilarious. Like nobody talks about the bullshit that is just built into business. Yes. That I want to give a shout out to Barbara Corcoran, who I think keeps it real.
How have you been able, though, to land? I mean, it's extremely impressive who you've been able to pull in for the fact that you all launched less than a year ago. I mean, I do events, too. I know how hard some of these people are to get a hold of and to bring in. So, I mean, how are you able to leverage that? That is just so amazing to me.
Yeah, well, there's a few things. One is that it's an organization that our speakers are excited about. So I think we have, you know, there's a lot of amazing organizations. There are a lot of amazing organizations specifically for women. What we really underline to these speakers is that when you come here and speak at Chief, these are women who could be running your side businesses. These are women who you want to be in a room with. And so like we do about half moderated conversation and one of our members usually runs the conversation and then half open Q&A. The Q&A is so spectacular because the caliber and the intelligence of our member, it's it's not like the usual couple questions. They're really amazing, intense conversations. So that's one part. I think the second is we specifically are off the record. So I'll post a quote that maybe one of our speakers said, but by and large, that she's cleared. But by and large, this is an off the record confidential organization. So all of our core groups, it's off the record. If you violate that, you're out. If you come to an event and you have an open, honest conversation with one of our community events and you're like posting live videos, you're out. Like, it's just not what we are about. And so even Chief as an organization, we're not on social media. So we have no Twitter, Instagram, Facebook presence. Yeah, we're on LinkedIn because occasionally we post about our workshops. So maybe I'm cheating. But we're not about social media. I'm not doing anything for the gram. Yes, I post an occasional photo of me and Tina Fey, because if you met Tina Fey, you'd post it too.
Yeah, I have no judgment there on you on that one at all.
Yeah, I had to. But I post from my personal account because he's not on social. And what's funny is that I spent, again, the last 5 years of my career at Casper, and I ran PR, marketing, content, social media for this brand that won a bunch of social media awards. And then I immediately start this up, and my co-founder and I have this long conversation, and she's like, okay, social media genius, what are we doing? And I looked at her and I was like, nothing. We're not doing anything. Because she is exhausted, our member, and she doesn't need another account to check. She doesn't need another inspirational quote from a woman. It's out there. It's been done before. And so this idea of confidentiality, of not secrets, but just having this trustworthy group that you feel like everybody is on the same page is really important to our members. It's important to, and it's important to our speakers. So I think it's allowed us to bring speakers in with the confidence of knowing that we're not going to like sell pictures to the paparazzi.
What I want to talk about is funding, because you landed an amazing funding round. I know and I'm going to blank on her name. I should have this in front of me. I apologize. I know the group that invested in you, there was a woman involved. Can you talk about the fundraising? Because I know as women companies, it is harder to get fundraising. Was that a hard venture for you all? Was it, I mean, obviously 22 million is not an easy feat by any means, but can you talk about that process? And as a women-led company, that journey of finding funding?
Yeah, by all means, the cards were stacked against us. Two women going out looking for funding for a company about women.
Yeah,
exactly.
And check, already, check, check.
Already, yeah, exactly. Did not feel like we were going to raise such a big round. Seed funding was tough. And it was tough because we had an idea and we had run a few focus groups and we had a lot of the market sizing, but we didn't have a prototype. We didn't have an MVP of an app because we didn't have an app.
Mm-hmm.
And so raising that first $3 million was tough. And thank God we met some people who really believed in us day one. Jesse Middleton from Flybridge, who just immediately could see that this would be massive and immediately could think of women who wanted to join. Ben Sun, who's on our board from Primary Venture, loves YPO and just the idea of YPO for women clicked with him way before we launched. And then we had some amazing partners for seed, Lisa Blau from Able Partners, Alexa Von Tobel personally invested, Silas Capital. And these were all people who met Carolyn and myself and really believed in what we were doing and took a chance. So I am so thankful to those people because we couldn't launch. We needed a space. We needed executive coaches. It's not like we could hack this together in a little app in our basement. And then I think when we went out to raise the A, we had learned a lot about what was working. And again, we struck a chord. We have these members. We had revenue, and so it was a really different process. And what was really exciting was instead of us begging, we ended up with, I think, 7 or 8 term sheets. from just fantastic investors that we didn't even get a chance to meet with for seed because these were different categorical investors. And what was really exciting was Ken Chenault, who joined our board. Ken from General Catalyst was CEO, chairman of American Express, who knows membership. And Ken, one of the first people of color to run a Fortune 50 company, who knows diversity, who knows premium branding better than Ken. Right. So when we started talking to Ken, it became really clear that this was somebody that we wanted on our side. And then Alexa Von Tobel was starting a new fund. And Alexa, again, was one of the few people who invested in us day one out of her own pocket. And so for her to launch a fund, Inspired Capital, I think one of the biggest fundraises by a woman-led firm, we were really excited for her to join our board as well. And, you know, just like a quick tip when women go out and raise, and I see this with men also, so this is not a purely lady thing. Carolyn and I had been in startup world for years. So we had been around it. We knew founders. We had a really good knowledge of what VCs were looking for. We had friends who were VCs. So we had a big leg up. And the knowledge I always share with people who are looking for VC funding is they're looking for, in my mind, three things: product, person, and market. And I think that entrepreneurs spend so much time on the product that they forget to tell the story about why they are the person to do it and how big the market is, and really showcasing that this is a VC backable business, because there are amazing entrepreneurs out there that aren't necessarily good candidates for VC money. And I wouldn't say you need to go straight to venture capital to raise. There's so many other vehicles for investing that my biggest piece of advice is really understanding what VCs are looking for, which is to be really simplistic. Can this business get to a $1 billion valuation? Yeah. And what's your out plan to get there? And I think Carolyn in particular, I mean, she's genius, my co-founder. She is Harvard Business School. She's just an incredible operator and businesswoman, could really tell that story of the business. And I could tell that emotional story about why she and I were the people to do it.
It's a great tip.
That is an absolute great tip. I mean, I wrote it down. Actually, I don't know if you heard me typing discreetly. I was trying to do it discreetly, but that is like the best advice. I mean, just tooting our own here out here in Dallas, we have such a robust entrepreneurial community, and we are really trying to drive investors to really consider Dallas as a great entrepreneurial, you know, hub, if you will. And that advice, I mean, you know, yes, it's a product, but it's, you know, the people and the market. That's huge. I think people forget it.
Yeah.
You're right. I can't tell you how many pitches I've listened to where they're like, my product does this. And it's like, that's great.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Right. But who are you selling to? Who are the competitors? And show me that it's, for me, it's not as exciting as telling the story of Chief, but showing that growth trajectory to get to a place that it's backable by a VC.
Yeah.
Or else there's, again, you can get loans, you can get friends and family. There's a lot of ways to get businesses off the ground, but VC startups are just a completely different beast, and they're not the only way forward. You could build an incredibly lucrative lifestyle business without taking a dollar of VC. And I think for most entrepreneurs, that should be the way you go.
Yeah.
You don't have to give equity of your company away. It really depends on your business and your aspirations and how much nerve you have to lose it all.
Yeah, exactly.
I know all that a little too well, giving up the corporate money and lifestyle.
Yeah. All right. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much again for joining us. We definitely want to wish you all the luck in the world. And when you're in Dallas, please, like when Dallas even starts to come on the radar, please let us know any way, shape, or form we can help you all make this happen, because selfishly we want you to come here. What were you going to say, Sia?
Amazing.
Yeah, well, also
join the wait list, and then we'll be more incentivized to get there.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And if you'd like to learn more, where's at chief.com?
Yes.
If you know what, it's not a big website because we don't have much of a web presence. But it was really a pleasure talking to you. And I'm excited for more women to get into positions of power and stay there.
Yeah. And of course, all of that, we'll put chief.com on our notes page over at innovationcalling.com. So thank you so much again. I really appreciate you taking time to chat with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Yeah. And that wraps it up for another episode of Innovation Calling.